Hopkins. Bryant for the win.
Interviews from your favorite local coaches and athletes.
He's getting to the basket of will, and he's hitting that three-point shot with some consistency now, and he's just in a groove right now where he's pretty well unstoppable.
Hall of Fame and legendary guests.
I was driven by loving to play, liking the challenge of being an NFL quarterback, but after 18 years, I was 1 month short of 39 years old. It's time to go.
Analysis and insight on the latest national sports topics. Live from the Auto Farm Studios, it's Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
Welcome into a brand new edition of Drive Time Sports. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. As always, happy to be with you on the afternoon drive, and we have plenty of basketball to get into today. Tonight, coming up, the NBA draft. It's going to begin at 5:30. That's when live coverage is going to begin. Number one pick, it belongs to the Minnesota Timberwolves. They are on the clock, and we have no indication as to who they are going to select. Is it Anthony Edwards, LaMelo Ball, they go Wiseman? I think there's more intrigue around this draft than we've had in quite some time because there was no combine and there was no NCAA tournament. I'm looking forward to the draft tonight. There was a trade earlier today. The Jazz are moving down. They've traded the 23rd pick to the Knicks for the 27th and the 38th pick. So the Jazz moving back just a tad in the draft. We'll talk a lot of NBA draft that's coming up on the show in just a bit. Also, next segment, we are going to be joined by Carbon High School Athletic Director Ted Bianco. No high school sports right now, but we're also around the same time where the new considerations for region realignment should be released. We're going to talk to Coach Bianco about that. We'll talk about the idea of resuming the high school winter sports season on Monday. Tryouts have yet to even take place for basketball. Wrestling should be gearing up this week, actually. So hopefully we're back on track Monday. Coach Bianco will join us on the show. We'll talk about that in just a bit. Before we take our commercial break, we got such a packed show today that I want to get to it. Some news coming out in Major League Baseball. Robinson Cano has tested positive for a banned substance. This was first reported by Jeff Passan of ESPN. He will be suspended for the entire upcoming season, and he has to give back his $24 million salary to the New York Mets. Robinson Cano banned for a season due to a new PED offense. That was breaking news from Jeff Passan just a little while ago. Why does he have a year banned? Well, it's the second PED suspension for Cano. He missed 80 games in 2018 after testing positive with the Mariners, and now he's testing positive with the Mets. A second positive test results in an automatic 162-game suspension. That's according to the Major League Baseball and Players Association drug agreement. Cano forfeits again his $24 million salary. This is really one of those deals you take a look at. Why? It's the second time this has happened to Cano. He signed a 10-year, $240 million deal with the Mariners. 2 years, $48 million remaining on his contract. The Mariners have to pay down $7.5 million of that, but he's going to lose $24 million of it. So that's the breaking news story. Again, we have a lot to get to. We're going to talk to Greg Peterson, one of the best college basketball minds you will find as far as breaking down prospects and in the college game. He joins us periodically to talk college hoops. We'll also catch up with Jabari Davis, great friend of mine, as we talk about the possible trades surrounding the NBA. And, of course, Ted Bianco will join us in just a moment. It's straight ahead on this edition of Drive Time Sports on 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
What you listening to?
Big Sports Radio Guy.
Prepare the water cooler, that we may gather around it later and discuss things.
It's time for the Coach's Corner on Drive Time Sports.
A standstill for local sports, but there may be some light at the end of the tunnel. We could potentially be back in business on Monday. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about everything that's happening at Carbon High School in general right now. Joining us over the phone, we have athletic director and girls basketball coach Ted Bianco. And coach, as always, it is a pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, definitely, Coach. I know it's kind of a dead time right now for local sports. I guess it's as good a place as ever to start. I mean, with the winter sports really only getting two swim meets in at Carbon High School, not a lot to talk about on that end. As far as coaches and the mindset is concerned, I mean, I would assume you guys are just assuming or at least preparing for that Monday start.
Well, we were getting ready for it, and then Sunday night the governor came on and basically canceled everything. So that was just kind of it was a letdown for me as a coach, and I'm sure it was a letdown for our kids. It sucked because all the excitement leading up to the start of it, it just kind of, gone away right there. So, but hopefully after he speaks on Friday, we'll get back to what we're trying to do, and hopefully we can get started and play with some new conditions so that we can keep our kids healthy throughout the season.
With you being an athletic director, Coach, what are some of the things that you've had to look at over the last couple of weeks as far as scheduling? I mean, is it as simple as just saying, okay, well, we pick up exactly on the date, and so if you've missed basketball games, those games are just canceled? Or do you try to rework the schedules? I mean, what's kind of the mindset there from the winter sports scene?
Well, for us, with girls basketball, we want to keep the games that we lost. We've rescheduled one of them. Our Grantsville game, which was canceled for the next Tuesday, will be rescheduled for December 14th. And then I know the boys have had a couple canceled, but they've rescheduled a couple of those that were canceled. So it's up to each individual coach. But my suggestion is we ought to let our kids play as many games as they can, because you never know when it's going to get shut down again. So we want our kids to play as many games as they can.
Well, and I guess along the same lines, as far as the RPI is concerned, you want as many games as possible.
Well, and I think that's a big part, but it wouldn't surprise me if they decided to maybe rework or rethink the whole RPI thing for this year because of the craziness in scheduling. You may see the state go back and just say, we're going to go with region standings and do it that way for 1 year. But who knows? I mean, if we get the majority of our games in, then the RPI will come into effect. I think it's a good program, but I could also see, if they said we're not starting until January, that pretty much leaves region schedules. And the RPI isn't necessarily based on playing an opponent more than once. So you get your RPI score, but with league schedules, there's a little thing built into the formula that it doesn't affect you it affects you differently when you play somebody twice. So it's something that hopefully they'll take a look at if that happens.
Coach, one of the things that has kind of been forgotten about, and as we were talking about the RPI, it kind of popped into my mind, around this time we should be getting at least an idea of what the regions may look like for next year, correct? And I know that's probably not on the forefront of the Utah High School Activities Association's mind with us having a stop right now in the winter sports season, but before too much longer, we should find out the rough idea of the placement of schools.
In our meeting yesterday, we had a region board meeting yesterday, our representative at the executive committee and the board of trustees committee, Steve Gordon, was mentioning that they're meeting tomorrow to discuss that. So they're going to kind of put teams in places with numbers. There will be an initial reveal of who's where from that first meeting, and then they'll go from there. So it's still on their minds. They want to have it done by Christmas. So we should know where we're going to be before we go home for Christmas, I hope. That still remains to be seen, but as far as what their plans are right now, they're definitely looking at it.
Again, our guest right now is Coach Ted Bianco, again, athletic director at Carbon High School. Coach, we'll talk about swimming for a moment. The only sport that actually got some action in the winter season before it was put on pause, the two-time defending Lady Dinos, they get out to a great start, two victories in their first couple of meets. We got to talk to Coach Chamberlain early this week. You want to talk about a downer? I mean, this is a group of girls that have a lot of returners that have been on both of those state championship squads. They got off to a great start this season.
They have, and they, like you said, they have a lot of returners, and that team's been built around a lot of those kids, and they've just continue to come up through the program, and that program's going to get stronger and stronger if they continue to do that. So kudos to those kids and those coaches, because I think they're doing a great job with that program. And it does suck for them. I mean, I'm sure that they're chomping at the bit to get back in the pool and compete against some of these teams around the state. We're looking forward to some big things from them. And I think our boys' team's improved too. Just listening to one of the assistant coaches that I eat lunch with each day, he was talking about how good they've been doing. So that's a program that everybody needs to keep their eye on in this community, because they've done some great things the last 2 years, and in my opinion, they're going to continue to do that.
It's fairly rare to talk about any school, any sports program going for 3 state championships in a row. That's just, it's odd. You don't hear that talk very often.
Well, and I think, you know, you look at what our girls have done in that program. The first one was the hardest one, I think, for them, because they came out and they, you know, it was that last swimmer that just had that time just right and put us over the edge, and we end up winning the state championship. And if you ask Allie, I think that was probably one of the most exciting times of her career as a coach. And last year, if you talk to a lot of the girls, it seemed like the pressure wasn't there as much, because they'd already been there and they knew exactly what they had to do. And so with that being said, I think that makes it, if you have that expectation, you know what that goal is and you know how to reach it, it makes it a little bit easier if you have never been there before. And I think our girls, they have the great mindset to get themselves again this year. So a three-peat, in my opinion, I think our girls swim team has a really, really good shot at winning 3 in a row, which, like you said, is a very difficult thing to do.
It'd be the first time in Carbon High School athletics history that a program is three-peater, wouldn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. We don't have any 3 in a row banners up there in our gym. So like I said, I'm excited to see where they finish this year. And it's just, they're such good kids and they work hard, and it's always fun to see a team have that much success.
Now, Coach, if we talk wrestling, we have a first-year head coach with Coach Prettyman, and obviously this is kind of a bizarre time. I know he's been around for a very long time, but I don't think it really matters, right? I mean, nothing can prepare you for what you're dealing with right now. How difficult has this been, and have you had to take on any role or any, I guess, maybe some leadership with Coach Prettyman to help get the wrestling program through what's happening at the moment?
Well, right now, wrestling's taken the biggest hit with COVID because of some of the restrictions that have been placed upon them. They can't have any overnight tournaments that they can go to. One of the big tournaments that they generally go to, if a kid wants to go to that, they have to go as an individual. They can't be represented. They can't represent our school. They can't have our coaches coach them at the Rocky Mountain Rumble because of some logistic things with another outlying wrestling association that's putting on that particular tournament. And I think the big thing is they want to have an overnight tournament. So they're basically, they've basically put a lot of restrictions on wrestling, and wrestling is going to be the hard one because it's such close contact and it's constant contact on a wrestling mat. So I think you're going to see some issues with COVID. And the biggest thing for our program is, number one, our kids have to be temperature checked every day. We have to make sure that when the testing comes around, that every one of those kids are tested before they step on the mat. And I think that's going to be a big change for all of us at every school around the state is the COVID testing that we're going to have to start doing. Our kids are going to have to be tested at least, I believe, once a week or once every 2 weeks before they're going to be allowed to participate. So, and I don't think that's a bad thing. I think that's a good thing, because what they're finding is there are a lot of people that have no symptoms. They're asymptomatic, and they don't know they have it, but they're still spreading it. And so hopefully with the testing and with our daily temperature checks and different things that we do with our kids before practice and during practice, hopefully we can make it through the season when it starts, and hopefully it does start next week.
Yeah, that's definitely the hope. Coach, on top of everything else that we have talked about right now, I guess one of the most difficult aspects of it, winter is the longest sports season of the two, of the three, if we're talking fall, winter, and spring. But in the same sense, time has got to be of the essence, right, when you start looking at rescheduling things, just because that spring sports, you and I have talked about this for years, it's so compact to begin with. You literally need every single day of that spring sports season.
Oh, absolutely. And I don't see... I don't see any way that the UHSA would push winter sports into the springtime just because of that fact, because I don't know that many schools are going to want their spring seasons to have to go into June, especially with seniors and graduation, and some kids may be leaving right after graduation to go on a mission or to go away to the military or go to the new city where they're going to be attending a college or university. It's just, I don't think that's feasible for our athletes. And so if we have to take a hit with our winter sports, we'll have to take a hit with our winter sports. What I hope doesn't happen is what happened to our spring sports last year. You know, you think back to last year when all this started, and everything got shut down immediately because we were afraid that the stuff that's happening now was going to really happen. You know, hospitals being overwhelmed, the number of deaths that are occurring because of the disease. It affected our youth more than I think anybody knows. And I think it is important for kids to have the opportunity to do the things that they love, because they only get to do it one time. But I also think it's extremely important that we are extremely careful with the way we approach the season, and we are going through all the protocols to keep our kids safe. You may come into a gym where there are no fans this year, and if that's the way it has to be, that's the way it has to be, because what it's really for is the kids. And we will do whatever we have to do to make it so our kids can get through the season.
Absolutely. Coach, it's always a pleasure to get you on the show. I definitely appreciate the time and the insight. I'm sure we'll be speaking again real soon. Thank you again.
Hey, thank you so much, Jordan, and have a great day.
Thank you, Coach. That's Ted Bianco, Athletic Director at Carbon High School, giving us an update on everything that's happening in that realm. Now we got to take a quick commercial break. Coming up, we'll start to preview the NBA draft tonight. The Utah Jazz had the 23rd pick. They have now moved back to 27 in a trade with the New York Knicks. We'll take a look at some of the top prospects. We'll also re-examine some of the bigger issues, some of the bigger storylines, I should say, in the NBA. That's coming up next right here on Drive Time Sports.
I understand you're a real sports fan.
Well, then there's only one answer.
Turn on the radio. You'll never have to compromise again.
You're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM at 750 AM.
We're counting down the hours to the NBA draft. Utah Jazz held the number 23 pick. That's been moved. Utah will now be picking at 27 and also acquiring a second-round pick. We'll talk about some of the prospects. We'll focus on the trades next segment, but right now I want to talk about the prospects of tonight's draft. And to help us do that, we're going to bring in Greg Peterson. Greg joins us every year to talk NCAA basketball. He also joins us to talk the NBA draft. We didn't have an opportunity to catch up with Greg because we had no March Madness last year. Greg, of course, the host of the podcast Hoopin' with Hoops. Greg, it's always a pleasure to get you on the show. I appreciate you making time again for us today. Thank you.
Jordan, always a pleasure, my friend. Thank you so much. And you know what? As of right now, we're 7 days away from the start of the college basketball season. What sort of a season we're going to have, how many games we're going to have, list goes on and on. We don't know, but we have something to look forward to. And at this point in 2020, it's more than we've been able to say for a very long time.
No doubt. And for those who don't know Greg, for one, he's a terrific follow on Twitter, but he eats, drinks, and sleeps college hoops. And so, Greg, as we prepare for the start of the NBA draft tonight and the start of the NCAA season in less than a week, boy, it's a weird time. But I guess the best way to start this segment, not having March Madness, how does that affect the NBA draft? Because every year we see risers, we see fallers. I'm always reminded of a couple of individuals that have catapulted their way up draft boards, and they weren't necessarily worthy of that selection. We don't have that hype. We don't have the hyperbole surrounding a certain player for exploding in the tournament because the tournament didn't exist last year.
I think what it does is that it's really going to be fascinating to see how some of these teams end up evaluating some of these prospects, because you don't wind up having that one slam dunk guy. You just take a look at the top. There's one of three guys that you can really pick from. You wind up having James Wiseman, who comes out of Memphis, but only wound up playing three games. Anthony Edwards, along with LaMelo Ball. There are so many mixed opinions on all three of these guys that the only way you really know who the Minnesota who the Minnesota Timberwolves or pretty much anyone else who winds up trading with the Minnesota Timberwolves feels about these guys is when they wind up making the selection. Because another thing that you need to keep in mind as well, there was no combine for these guys. I think that that's the biggest thing of all, because when you talk about guys whose stock goes up and down, you really rely upon the combine. You get these five-on-fives. You get all the intangibles, playing against the chair and everything like that. The combination of both of those things makes this the most unpredictable draft ever. You have to feel like some of these teams are throwing out their smoke screens, and you could have a team that they might view like Xavier Tillman, for example, a guy that I'm seeing on a lot of mock drafts in the early second round, maybe super late first round. You could have a team on 15 that says, you know what, we really like Xavier Tillman. They wind up taking him. And here, I think that might be commonplace in the draft.
Now, let's start by talking about the three prospects that you mentioned, and we'll start with LaMelo Ball. I don't know if you could find a more unorthodox approach to the NBA than what LaMelo Ball has had over the last 3 years. It's almost sad, really, when you take a look at the hype that was built and what we never got to see, be it on an international level or even on a nationwide level, right? I mean, it's sad to me because when I look at LaMelo Ball, here's a kid that's 6'6", 6'7", sees the court better, in my mind, than anybody in the draft for his age, can do things with the basketball as far as playmaking just as well as anybody in this draft that is his age, yet he's not a slam dunk number one. And Greg, I have to believe that a lot of that has to be the approach and the time leading up to this draft and his journey.
And a lot of it has to do with just the fact that he hasn't played a lot of games either. Even when he was playing overseas, he played fewer than 20 games, and last time he played was over a full year ago. So that's huge. And when you take a look at LaMelo Ball, the big thing with him is that he's got some of the best court vision that you're ever going to see for a player, but at the same time, he's not efficient, and part of that is the level of competition. They always try to make the comparison when it comes to college basketball versus international basketball. The NCAA would be more like double-A if you're taking a look for a minor league baseball sliding scale, and international basketball is triple-A with things like the league out there in Greece, places like that. Those are essentially the top levels of basketball that you're going to find that aren't the NBA. So I do think that's so fascinating that you have that LaMelo Ball. And then obviously you've got the whole circus that comes along with the father of LaMelo Ball. We all know about LaVar Ball, all of his antics, and it is one of these things which I think it makes it so tough to evaluate LaMelo Ball, because when you're evaluating him, you're not evaluating him against NCAA competition. So he's already on a different sliding scale right there. You have to factor in the off-the-court antics, everything like that. I mean, LaMelo Ball is 6'6". He's one of the passers that you're ever going to find. But, I mean, with just such few games being played, it feels like he's a big unknown in this draft.
I like the idea of LaMelo Ball next to D'Angelo Russell in Minnesota. I've warmed up to that idea based off the court vision and what he can do with the ball in his hands. Honestly, Greg, it's something that at first I thought, oh, there's no way LaMelo Ball is going to go number one. But the more and more I research it, I'm really curious to see what this would look like, LaMelo Ball alongside D'Angelo Russell.
And I think what really makes LaMelo Ball a good fit there is just because he does have the size. If LaMelo Ball was more like 6'1", 6'2", then it makes it easier to guard him. You don't necessarily have as much size out there on the perimeter, but his size is big. Now, he just needs to be a little bit more efficient on the offensive end, and playing alongside NBA players like a D'Angelo Russell, that's going to be able to help him out. And if he does wind up landing in Minnesota, like you just mentioned, Karl-Anthony Towns, you know what? That's a guy that could help him out as well.
Now, speaking of Minnesota, another guy that could play alongside, and I guess it's an interesting pairing, would be James Wiseman. And I think Minnesota has to consider Wiseman with a number one pick. You put him alongside Karl-Anthony Towns. I don't think there's any question about it. At 7'1", 240 pounds, we're talking about a physical specimen in James Wiseman. He only got to play three games, as you mentioned, in Memphis. A little bit sad. I really wanted to see what this guy could bring to the table, especially being linked to Anthony Hardaway. But nonetheless, this guy's got to get heavy consideration at number one. And if not number one, it would be a seamless fit with Golden State at number two.
I'm seeing a lot of people that have him protected at number two, and I think that that's probably where he's going to wind up going. From everything I've been hearing, Minnesota just has not reached out to James Wiseman at this point. I do think a lot of it is because they think, oh, we've already got Anthony Towns. you don't want to be going a little bit too big because this is a league in which they value three-point shots and they value easy at the layup, easy looks at the rim, layups, everything like that. So I do think that winds up being wise, but at number two, you've heard the projections to being more of a DeAndre Jordan type, but this is someone that has actually been working on his range a little bit more. I don't know if he's necessarily going to be that DeAndre Jordan, that Andre Drummond type player in which all he does is pull down rebounds. He is one of the more terrific defenders that you're going to find. This guy can be a shot-blocking machine. Now, we only got to see him for three games in college, and really only one good opponent is what he wound up playing, Oregon. I mean, I think one of those games was against like South Carolina State, so you really can't put much stock there. You have to go back to his high school days, but this is certainly someone that he's got a lot of intangibles. But I will say, if I'm looking for a little bit more of a big man in the draft, I'd probably be looking at USC's Onyeka Okongwu. He actually wound up playing at Chino Hills alongside the Ball Brothers. He really showed out at USC. He's another guy that's able to block shots. He's a guy that was able to pull down 8.5 rebounds as a freshman. He had to be a little bit of an alpha dog player on both sides of the floor for USC. I'd probably be looking at him sort of in that same vein of James Wiseman. I recognize that Wiseman has the higher ceiling, but if you're taking a look at a guy that you know what you're going to get and you know that he's going to be able to step out there day one and he's going to be reliable for you, I would be looking at Okongwu, and it seems like he's been one of the biggest risers on a lot of these draft boards.
Okay, so if we're talking about NBA-ready players right now, and I mentioned Wiseman being a physical specimen, and we talked about LaMelo Ball and the size that he has, which makes it intriguing to play alongside D'Angelo Russell. Anthony Edwards is 6'5", 225. He's got a ready body, and he appears to be a ready scorer right now. And in a league where we are seeing offense becoming more and more relevant by the day, why isn't Anthony Edwards the lock for the number one pick tonight?
I think it's just because Georgia was so bad last year. You take a look at what Georgia did. They were the one of the bottom feeders out there in the SEC. I think only Vanderbilt had worse record than Georgia last year. This is a team that they just put absolutely nothing around. And thus, a bad shot for Anthony Edwards was better than a good shot for a lot of his teammates. So that's why he wound up shooting right in the neighborhood of about 32 to 33% from three-point range. You take a look at what he's able to do, you put on the tape, he's got some of the best dunks that you're going to be able to find out there in college basketball last year. But all freshmen with nearly 20 points per game. That was absolutely incredible what he was able to do. But the problem was, he has bad moments on film just because he played along so many guys that are not even going to be able to sniff the professional level. And Georgia, just a team that they had massive incompetence. I will say that Tom Crean, the coach over there at Georgia, he's still riding coattails with Dwayne Wade. He never figured it out at Indiana, at Marquette. Once Dwayne Wade wound up leaving, things wound up going downhill for him as well. So he wasn't well coached. He didn't have a lot of talent around him, but he's someone that you put him in pretty much any of these NBA-style offenses, you put him on any of these teams, he is going to be able to flourish. He's able to get to the rim. He's able to get his own shot. Now, he can be a little bit inefficient, but I think that putting him around just more talent in general is going to allow him to be a little bit more passive, and I think that he's going to be able to flourish in the NBA.
Greg, let's step away from the top three. I have to ask you about Sam Merrill from Utah State because, of course, here in the state of Utah, it's a draft prospect that a lot of people got excited about. Really, the league, again, it's transformed into a league where you need a player like Sam. Here's a guy that can definitely stretch the court. Shoots 42% from deep at Utah State. He's a senior. 6'5", 205 pounds. We can talk about not having enough tape on a lot of the guys that we just mentioned. That's not the case with Sam Merrill. That's not the case at all. And I think you have a couple of other guys in this draft, maybe even a Desmond Bain, a guy that can shoot the outside shot. He's a senior as well. We have a lot of tape on these guys. Does this particular draft benefit someone like a Sam Merrill or a Desmond Bain opposed to other drafts when teams may look at the age of 22 as a detriment, saying, okay, well, that's three less years we have to develop this guy on the 4 to 5 year rookie contract. Is it a detriment or is it not a detriment this year as it would have been compared to other seasons?
I think more teams are warming up to these 21, 22. It used to be that if you wound up returning to school for more than 1 year, you were deemed ancient. And I think a lot of us are realizing, oh, Damian Lillard, he wound up going to school for quite a few years. Look at what he's been able to do. CJ McCollum, list goes on and on. These guys that wind up having good college careers. They've come into the NBA and they've been able to duplicate it. Meanwhile, these guys that you're taking on NIL quotes outside, a lot of these guys have just been flat out bust. So I do think that a guy like Sam Merrill has been benefiting not just from this year in general, but what we've seen the last couple years. I do take a look at this NBA draft board, someone like a Peyton Pritchard, who wound up being the Pac-12 Player of the Year, shot over 40% from three-point range, 20.5 points. He wound up starting in a Final Four as a freshman. You just can't duplicate that experience. Meanwhile, you're taking a look at some of these guys that are rising up draft boards, like a Patrick Williams. I mean, yeah, it's nice that he's able to guard multiple positions, but you don't necessarily have a whole bunch of knockdown shooters. You're really drafting on upside if you're taking someone like a Devin Vassell. And I would say that that more so now than ever is big, because what we also know with the NBA is that they're going to be starting in the latter weeks of December, which means that they're going to need to bring these guys in. They're going to have a couple weeks to be able to develop them. They're going to have a couple weeks to be able to get down the offense. And these guys that they wind up playing for 4 years, they already come in with experience. You're probably not going to have as much of a D-League this season as well, which I think is something that is factoring into all this stuff. It means that the development is going to be stunted at the very best. And I do think that that helps out a guy like a Sam Merrill. It helps out a guy like a Peyton Pritchard. These guys that want to go to school for 3 to 4 years, they're able to make a contribution right away. Meanwhile, the development of these younger guys, I think it's going to be stunted this year.
Greg Peterson, again, the host of the podcast Hoopin' with Hoops. Greg, it is always a pleasure to get you on to talk about college hoops and the NBA draft. I'm sure we'll be talking college hoops, hopefully, relatively soon. Thank you again for the time.
Jordan, it's a pleasure, my friend. Thank you.
Let's take one more quick commercial break. When we come back, we'll view the other side of the NBA draft. Some teams that may be looking to make moves. Here we are about a month away from the start of the season, draft night, bizarre time of the NBA. We'll talk more of that when we return right after this.
With the sixth pick in the 2014 NBA draft, the Boston Celtics select Marcus Smart from Oklahoma State University.
This is Marcus Smart from the Boston Celtics, and you're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini.
Marcus Smart, what a spin move and a finish. Hard to handle Marcus Smart, whether he's outside or inside the paint.
We've already talked about the prospects in tonight's draft, so let's move over to the other side of the table because there has been a lot of movement. We know tonight the Los Angeles Lakers will be selecting the 28th pick for the Oklahoma City Thunder. That'll be a part of the Dennis Schroeder deal. Robert Covington on his way out of Houston might not be the only name that the Rockets are shipping out. Gordon Hayward, his time in Boston may be done. And then, of course, you have the Utah Jazz situation. I don't think Rudy Gobert gets moved tonight. I don't think it's anything of that nature, but it is still a topic that I believe deserves some attention. We're going to talk about that and more right now with our next guest, Jabari Davis, co-host of the Dunks and Discourse podcast, one of the only podcasts I listen to. I'm not a big podcast guy, but I highly recommend this one. Jabari, as always, a pleasure to get you on the show. Thank you again for the time.
My man, it's always the pleasure is always mine. I appreciate it.
Yeah, definitely. Absolutely. We always have fun conversations, and it's a fun time of the year, a month away from the NBA season, but here we are, middle of November, week before Thanksgiving. We have the draft tonight. Jabari, what's been the most interesting storyline for you to follow over the last 4 or 5 days in the NBA, be it the draft, be it a specific team, maybe a specific player? What's been the one topic that you just can't seem to get enough of, and it has your attention at all times?
Well, the truth be told, all of it. I'm truly an NBA addict, but it has to be the Houston situation. Of course, there are other, plenty of other folks that are potentially on the move or, could be making a decision, coming up on Friday and whatnot. But it's the Houston situation because we went in, it's funny, and I appreciate the shout about the podcast. On that podcast, we discussed, right after Houston season ended, we discussed, whether or not they break it up, whether or not, which one of the two guys is more likely to be moved. And to be honest with you, the general consensus, not just from us, but, from around for the folks that I spoke to, was that, it should be Harden, but they'll never move on from him. And all of a sudden, you had Russell Westbrook come out at the beginning of the week or at the very end of last week and make it known that he would like to play elsewhere. But then all of a sudden, James Harden said, I actually have no desire to be here either. So for me, it's looking at what they're going to do with that, you know, the roster, looking at Tillman Fertitta and, you know, some of the financial struggles that he's, you know, very clearly been in over the last year, and wondering, you know, just how long it is until we start to hear, you know, maybe potentially going ahead and selling that team. And all around, just the fact that, you know, they've got a brand new GM, a brand new head coach, and really everything is completely up in the air. That's a crazy situation considering that they were legitimately considered a contender, what, just a month and a half ago?
Yeah, and I don't want to stray too far away from this particular topic, but I'm going to tell you what bothers me most about the Houston Rockets situation. I understand the player empowerment movement. I get this.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Yet, in the same sense, it is now starting to take on a different life of its own. And when you have someone of James Harden's caliber who has 2 years remaining on his contract and he's demanding a trade, trying to force the organization's hands based off a contract he signed, I have a problem with that. I don't necessarily mind when they're in the final year of a contract. Look, in my mind, I've always viewed it as if a player demands a trade in the final year of his contract, he's doing you a favor. He's doing the organization a favor. I almost feel as if James Harden's being flat-out disrespectful right now to the situation in Houston, and you can throw any scenario you want out there with me. The bottom line is, he knows, and Russell Westbrook knows, there's no way this Houston team's winning in the Western Conference.
Mm-hmm. I'm of two mindsets with that, because I hear you. I hear what you're saying, but let me ask you this. How'd you feel about the Clippers after they went through the motion of, you know, putting Blake Griffin on a shirt with, you know, Gandhi and, you know, all types of different luminaries and figures, you know, and presenting it as though he's a part of the family after convincing him to sign a 5-year extension, and then they traded him 3 months later. And the reason why I bring that up, it's not to do a what about. It's specifically because that has been the name of the game on the reverse all along. It always has been. The only difference is, and you know, it's funny, as it gets phrased as player empowerment, the only difference is now they finally have a voice in the same action, in the same way. I recognize that we, you know, that we are traditionally socialized to, you know, generally be on the, you know, on the side of the organization. But you know what? Honestly, I'm not. Now, is it a raw deal? Yes. Just like I think it's a raw deal when organizations sign on with players, act as though they're going to keep them, act as though they're part of the future, and end up moving them. It stinks, but it's also the way business is done now. James Harden, they don't have to move him. Russell Westbrook, they don't have to move him. But we also all know what's going to take place. Ultimately, they can posture as though, no, we're fine, we don't need to. They're going to move him because, and honestly, not just because they want to be moved, but because the Houston organization sees the reality that they're not going to win anytime soon. So honestly, it wouldn't be in their best interest to pay two different guys, you know, upwards of $40 million a season.
No, and also going back to it, when you're a player such as Russell Westbrook and you sign a contract to the extent that he signed, I mean, again, you look at that deal, there's only one possible place for Russell Westbrook to go in my mind, and that is Washington and the deal that was discussed about John Wall, and we went into detail on that yesterday. Outside of that, when you sign a deal of that nature, you have to understand you're assuming the risk that you're stuck in that spot for a while because it's going to be very difficult to move that deal.
Yeah, and if we're being honest, of course they had to know, but at the same time, they probably recognize, like, hey, look, if it doesn't work out, we can make a stink, or ultimately it'll probably be mutually beneficial for us to make this stink and to go ahead and get us out of here. But no, I know that it sounds like I'm riding the fence, because to a certain degree I am, but I don't want to differentiate between the two, because the commitment is made, and then ultimately one side changes their mind. It's happened all along. It's going to continue to happen. But yeah, if you're Russell Westbrook, it's probably going to be Washington. But let me ask you this. I put this out on the timeline the other day. Why don't the Knicks? The Knicks have been a joke for a long time. We know this. I don't even mean to ride them. It's not even a matter of trolling them. I'm not talking about Russell Westbrook. Why don't the Knicks jump out there and say, hey, we'll give you 5 drafts worth for James Harden? You're never going to sign a guy like that, or at least you certainly haven't over the last, you know, outside of Carmelo Anthony over the last, you know, 15, 20 years. I'm interested in your thoughts on that. If you were the Knicks, or an organization like that has difficulty bringing in talent, would you, you know, go ahead and say, take our next 5 drafts for that player?
Yeah, absolutely. And I had this conversation earlier the week with a mutual friend, Jameson Welsh, on the show, and I used a football reference here. At times, you have to overpay for talent, knowing that you have to change a mindset. You have to change public perception at some point in time. And so if there is even a glimmer of hope that you could find a way to make a deal with Houston for James Harden, you have to do it. I think you have to do it. And you bend to whatever Houston wants. At some point in time, the New York Knicks are going to have to overpay and even mortgage their future from a asset perspective with the hopes that you can lure a free agent to play with a superstar. I think it's really that simple. I don't think you have to be a basketball or a salary cap guru to understand that at some point in time, the Knicks are going to have to make a bold move to change the landscape of that organization. And I think James Harden may be the perfect opportunity to do that.
Totally agreed. The Knicks need that Hyundai remake. You remember when we were kids, or actually even before you were a young man, Hyundais were seen as like the cheap, piece of junk car. Now, but over the course of 15 to 20 years, they made the right moves and made it to where it's a respectable car. No disrespect to anybody that had an 80s Hyundai. My family, we had one, and we all know what that was. But that's the Knicks right now. The Knicks need to absolutely make a move of that nature. I didn't mean to take it off on a tangent, but that's just something that continues to boggle my mind why a team like that won't do it.
Oh, I agree. 100%. Again, Jabari Davis, our guest right now as we talk. Some of the news surrounding the NBA. Jabari, Friday is a very big day as well because it's the beginning of free agency, and we've heard some tidbits. Who's the most interesting free agent in your mind? I mean, we don't have that marquee guy. I know Anthony Davis is out there, but it seems like a formality that he'll re-up with the Los Angeles Lakers. And so you start looking, and it's Fred VanVleet. It's Danilo Gallinari. It's Serge Ibaka. I mean, there's no marquee name, but these are all viable options that will need to be on a squad if they want to transform themselves into a championship contender. They're key pieces, just not marquee names.
Yeah, I think you hit it on the head. There's no big name, but all of them can be contributors. Like, for me personally, I'm looking at a guy like Serge Ibaka, or I'm looking at Jeremy Grant, because obviously I lean more towards the Lakers and what would be in their best interest. So names like that are always going to be a major name for me, and I'm very intrigued to see if the Lakers can wind up landing one or two of those types of guys. But it really just depends on the given team's needs. While there's no sexy names out there, I actually think there are going to be several teams that significantly improve this offseason.
I think so. And I also believe that we're going to see a significant group of teams that refuse to spend money based on the current climate.
Yeah, and that is likely. And you know what? I won't poo-poo it. The fact that, upwards of hundreds of millions or maybe potentially even more was collectively lost in this last season, not just because of the COVID situation, but obviously because of the Hong Kong situation prior to that, I actually understand it. It's going to stink for those, for the fan bases of those teams that may or may not be right there on the precipice or at least within the vicinity of being there and simply aren't in the position that, have deemed themselves out of the race for some of these guys. But you know what? For those of us that support teams that are more than willing to spend a little money right now, even at unprecedented time, it's going to be more for us.
All right, let's end with this. It's not Utah Jazz talk, but we can relate it to the Jazz. Gordon Hayward, what happens with this situation in Boston? The Celtics have allowed Gordon Hayward to push back the deadline to exercise his player option to Thursday, tomorrow. $34 million on the books. We've heard rumblings that maybe Atlanta would be interested in Gordon Hayward, and the fact of the matter is if he declines that player option, he will get nowhere near $34 million. I mean, if he gets half of that, I think he would probably take it and run based off of what we've seen over the last 3 years from an injury standpoint. What happens with Gordon Hayward in Boston?
I think we get some surprise team that comes in and says, we'll be in the Gordon Hayward business. Now, whether that's, we've had this conversation several times before, so I don't want it to come across a certain way, but whether that's a market like Indiana or Minnesota or somewhere of that nature where a star of Gordon Hayward's nature will play very well, I absolutely think that's going to be the case. I think when the first thing I thought when I saw that they mutually agreed to push it back was, okay, they want to give it a little bit more time to work out the kinks in whatever the move's going to be for a sign-and-trade type deal.
Jabari Davis, again, the co-host of the Dunks and Discourse podcast, always kind enough to take out the time to join us on the show. Jabari, as always, I got to give you time to talk about the podcast and, of course, let the listeners know where they can find more of your work.
Jordan, I truly say this every time, but it's an honor. I appreciate every single time we have these conversations, so thank you. Dunks and Discourse is very simple. You can find us on any platform that you get your podcast. Really, the easiest way to find me is on Twitter. I'll interact and engage with anybody as long as you come correct and you aren't disrespectful. And even if you are, if it's funny, I'll rock with you. So Jabari Davis, NBA, for anybody out there that wants to have more of this fun and enlightening conversation.
Jabari, a pleasure. Look forward to talking again as free agency approaches. Thank you for the time.
My pleasure, man. Thank you.
And with that, we are out of time on this edition of the show. Enjoy the NBA draft. We'll recap it tomorrow right here on Drive Time Sports. Be safe. I am out.